Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Joe Ryan, sports writer, getting ready to talk about the world of sports on this Saturday morning. It's hot, muggy morning, so we can be hot, muggy, and miserable. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing well in this post 4th of July. How was your 4th of July?
Rather quiet. A little fireworks, nothing spectacular, no big picnics or anything. Did not tune in to the presidential parade or anything like that, so I have no comments on that.
No,
but
I didn't watch that either.
So we have a lot of more fireworks off the court in the NBA fired last night as Kawhi finally picked the Clippers and got George to come along with him. So it looks like they're set up with a good shop out there. The Yankees and the Mets, we're going to do a lot of baseball today because it is the halfway point when we have your halfway grades to go through, which we'll start out with right away. Last night, the Yankees came from behind another victory over Tampa, which helps put Tampa further in their rearview mirror. And did something new happen last week with the Mets?
Bullpen meltdown.
Never seen
that before. Never seen that before.
Never seen that. No, not this. Not with Brady Van Wagenen, and what the hell were you talking about? But we're going to do a lot today. But we want to start out today. Mid-season baseball. We're going into the All-Star break. Let's get into a little bit locals and around the Major League Baseball, what we think of the season so far. And we're going to let Bob take the lead on that. So, Bob, start me up.
Well, I wrote down my first half award winners, and I'll see if Joe agrees with me, if he has some other choices. For AL Manager of the Year, I think he has an idea where I'm going to go with this. It's got to be Aaron Boone. To have a team 27, 28 games over 500, considering how many injuries they had, is amazing. I mean, Rocco Baldelli would probably be the runner-up, the Twins.
Yeah, let's say the Twins.
More than 20 games over 500. The AL MVP, I got to stay with the Yankees, DJ LeMahieu. His numbers with runners in scoring position, I think it was like 480 when I last checked, which is historic.
Yeah.
He's 9-for-11 with the bases loaded, which is even more amazing. Cy Young, this is really interesting. I got to go with Charlie Morton from the Rays. He's 9-for-11, last checked, a 2.36 ERA. So somebody that's definitely flying under the radar.
Yeah, definitely.
Lucas Giolito from the White Sox. He's 11-2 ERA under 3, but Morton plays on a better team, so I'll give the nod to him. Rookie of the Year, no one's really standing out, but you know, it's Michael Chavez from the Red Sox.
Okay.
265, 14, 44. National League Manager of the Year, do we have to pick one? There's only two teams more than a handful of games over 500. I'll go with Brian Snitker from the Braves. They look like they might be ready to pull away in the NL East. MVP, there's a slew of candidates in the National League. I wrote them all down. Yelich, Arenado, Charlie Blackman. Go with Cody Bellinger, though.
Yeah.
He's got 70 RBI. Cy Young. Hyun Jin Ryu from the Dodgers, got the ERA under 2. Rookie of the Year, Alonso. Got to go with Alonso.
Definitely. Yay! Something finally for the Mets to be happy.
28 home runs at the break. Chance to get 50. So that's my award winners.
I can't disagree with it. I would say you hit it right on the money. I would, fortunately, and it's not just being an anti-Yankite, I would go with Baldelli because it's kind of, even though the Yankees have come through all the injuries and stuff, just kind of, they're where they're supposed to be. And I take what you're saying, right. But I think it was more attributed to the scouting department, Cashman, for having those kind of players available. I mean, the LeMahieu signing, the bullpen, that and everybody knows I'm not a big Brian Cashman fan. I feel that, you know, when you're giving the keys to a Maserati, it's hard to screw it up unless you really run it into a wall, which he never did. And he's become better, as a general manager, as he's gone on. A lot of credence to the wins he had in the late 90s. He made some good moves, but he had a core there that was built for him that was hard to screw up. And, you know, he rode that wave. But the thing was, he's never let it go off the precipice. You can question some of his moves, especially on the mound. You maybe can sit there and go, A-Rod was a waste of time if you're not an A-Rod fan, which is true. I'm not an A-Rod fan, but you can't go away from him. He was a pretty Yankee. You know, so you can take apart little bits of Brian Cashman's resume. But the fact of the matter is, here's a man that took over a good franchise and has kept it on the same beat. And now it looks like, we were talking before, on the verge of becoming what could become a second dynasty in a 20-year period, which is ridiculous when you think about this. It would be like if Belichick stays, Brady retires, and they get the kid from Clemson as their quarterback, and they go on to win another, you know, six Super Bowls. I mean, this is basically what we're seeing Brian Cashman put together. You know, anybody who knows the Yankee history, you know, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, they had great teams. But I don't think there was one general manager throughout that stayed with the team like Brian Cashman has.
Was there for a long time in the 40s and 50s, I believe.
Okay.
Right. Not 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, and to maintain this kind of – that's why I would go Baldelli more. The one thing, you know, as I was listening to you read about baseball right now, has the lack of pennant races, the lack of competition, you know, the that people aren't noticing some of the great years that people have. Like you said, Bellinger, on the verge of like 150 RBI season, and nobody's noticing it. No, nobody's paying attention to it because the Dodgers out in front that no one really cares about. You know, I don't know. You tell me, do you think it's this whole baseball season is going under the radar because people just aren't paying attention because they feel like it's over already?
Attendance is down, and I think the reason for that is the lack of competitive races. You're in a lot of cities. You got no reason to go to baseball games, Major League Baseball games. I think maybe they are flying a little bit under the radar. There's only one division that's close, the NL Central, which I guess it's good, but it's kind of wacky. I mean,
it's
like nobody wants to win it. I guess from a fan standpoint, it makes for, you know, some interest.
Yeah, but if you're Minnesota, and you know, maybe I'm coming from a Northeast bias, you know one thing. Minnesota has no chance against the Yankees.
I won't say they have no chance.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. If we go by past performance and what we've seen with our eyes, they have no chance against the Yankees.
And
so
they're certainly going to have to prove that they can beat the Yankees.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you talked about the Yankees starting another dynasty. How about winning a championship before? This is going to be the first decade in their since the 20s where they haven't won a World Series. So,
oh man, I feel sorry for them.
Well, you should feel sorry for them.
Oh, I'm sure the rest of baseball is crying about that for the Yankees. Ooh, they didn't win a championship this year.
Yeah.
This decade.
They've gone.
Hey, look.
10 years without a championship.
Oh my God, sounds like my sex life. sorry, just had to bring it up. So I had to put it in a manner of context in my mind. But anyways, so, you know, it's just what it is that you know, the Yankees make it hard to feel sorry for them. But I mean, this year, the Yankees are a great story if you look at it. To lose the type of players they lost for the significant amount of time they've lost them, and to still be so far out in front in their division, like it's an amazing story, and it should be something that people should be noticing and talking about, and no one is talking about it because no one's talking about baseball, really, that I see. It's amazing how much time in the media was spent on NBA free agents and the NBA this year. I really think the NBA, whether their ratings are up, down, or sideways, they took a step forward as rivaling in being. I mean, have we come to a point?
The NBA masters the game of the public relations.
Well, yeah, and also the NFL.
And the NFL.
Is this a poor, you know, not to get into this overanalyzation, is it because we would rather talk about our fantasy leagues and the kids are all into their Xboxes and putting their super teams on the Xboxes and making trades, putting players on teams they never on their Xboxes and going to win a Super Bowl, you know, putting together a super team, that we're into fantasy more than we are as to watching the real stuff that are going on. We'd rather worry about that you know, the next free agent we can pick up. I mean, I heard this week with the NBA, the Knicks are already spinning Giannis in 21. They already failed to get the two ones they thought they were going to have, the two they thought they had in the bag, and already they're saying, well, Giannis is going to be a free agent in 21, and we'll just work our way to get it.
People are fascinated, I guess, about where's this guy going? Where's that guy going? And the NBA understands that, and it sells it and promotes it, and it just it creates this frenzy that we talk about it constantly, and it's bizarre.
But as fans, I mean, you know,
for me,
as fans, even like, you know, a Met fan growing up, and we were our first memories. Neither team, I mean, the '69 was a blip on the radar for the Mets. But the fact of the matter is that Met team was, you know, yeah, young Seaver, young Kuzman. You thought in the '69 that they were going to be something more spectacular than they were. I mean, they won in '72 and then lost to a better Oakland team in the World Series. Definitely one of the best, most underrated teams in baseball history. No one ever talks about that Oakland A's team of the early '70s, which was a fantastic team.
Yeah, they would have won more if Charlie Finley didn't break up the team, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and if they free agency, just they were at the wrong time. You really want to talk about it. If they were built in the '60s,
could have won four or five in a row.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it depends on everything, but I mean, it's funny how, you know, when we were growing up, there was something noble about rooting for your team, whether they're winning, whether they're losing.
And players stayed with the team for 7-8 years.
Yeah, yeah. You weren't sitting there. You were. I'll bet you were heartbroken when they traded Bobby Mercer for Bobby Bonds.
I was.
You know,
I was crushed.
I mean, Bobby Mercer was a star of the city.
Yep.
He was everything that the Yankees were supposed to be about, and
yep,
he was an all-star.
Yep.
And anybody who doesn't was not around to see Bobby Mercer early in his career. Guy was a damn fine player. I mean, he was a really good player, and it's unfortunate. I think hurt him was, of course, went to Shea, and he was a short porch guy. He lived on that short porch. That made him a pretty home run.
Playing at Shea.
Yeah, well, because it wasn't tailored to his talents. It was like when they sent him out to San Francisco. That wasn't a part.
No,
I mean, he was a specific. He was really a Yankee-specific hitter. I mean, he was that short porch guy. I mean, it's not nothing against him. He was groomed to play in Yankee Stadium. That's why they picked him. And unfortunately, not to get off the track, but that's what happened.
He was either born too early or too late.
Exactly.
You know?
But I mean, you know, back to this baseball season, which is really, we're half over it. It's even that prank last weekend of playing in Great Britain, I don't think we paid attention to it. I mean, in Boston, in New York, yeah. But I don't – it wasn't even built up that big to me. I mean, that should have been national games that everybody were watching. You know, I think more people were talking about the World Cup and their celebrations than the Yankees and the Red Sox, the storied, legendary rivalry playing over in England. I mean, no one was talking about that. You're talking about the World Cup.
I think Fox tried to hide it. You know, playing at 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday can't help.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm sorry. It's just, to me, even around here, no one really talked about it as a big thing. It was not even a big thing on sports talk. I mean, did you see a lot of, did you hear a lot of people, did you hear a lot of buzz on the street about it? Anything?
Well, you know, where I work, nobody cares about sports at all.
Well, I mean, it's just anybody outside of maybe you and me bitching about it. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, what was it? Was it talked about on sports radio?
No, he just said, Yankees won. They scored 12 from this. No one even talked to seven. They scored 29 runs in two games. What? No one even examined and said, well, no one even got into an argument of, is the park too small? Is it, why is there so many runs? Why was the pitch affected? No one even looked into it and said, it happened. It was over there and it's over with. It meant nothing. It did nothing. And like I said, this baseball season, if you're a real baseball fan, is going by so fast and no one's noticing anything about it. It's like, get us to October. We know who's going to be there. It's over with. I'm just saying, I think this season, if I was the commissioner, if I'm Manfred, I'm sitting there going, wow.
It's been like this for 3 years.
Then you got a lot of big problems happening.
When you have 162 games, how are you going to hype one or two games in the middle of the season?
Then don't do it. Then why are you even trying it?
Right.
Why would you even try it? There was somebody who came up with a great point on Sports Talk Radio this morning. I don't give credit to Richard Neer of the FFA. I was listening to him on the way in. And one of his callers said, okay, explain to me one thing. We can play a game. We can play games over in England, and the teams are shut down four games inside of it, right? But when they get to the playoffs, they can't figure out a way to make the first round 2 out of 3 instead of just one game.
November.
But here's the deal. It's like, okay, shorten, you know, do what you got to do, move the games around so maybe they, instead of getting done in the first week of October, they get done in the last week of September. You found four extra days in the middle of the season to fly them over to England and fly them back. That could have been two games in the playoffs.
That means doubleheaders.
I'm fine with that.
And you know, Major League teams are loath to schedule doubleheaders.
Then you know what the whole thing is? They're losing the interest. I mean, at some point, they're just a microcosm of the world. You know, greed is not good, Gordon Gekko. Sometimes you have to sit there and do it for, you know, your family. You want interest. You want to come out, but you're not doing anything to help us.
You need more competitive balance. You need close races. Now, play devil's advocate. Is it worth getting excited about that the wild card races appear very close, or is this just playing for like the number 4 seed, the number 5 seed?
It basically
It's just a bunch of mediocre teams.
Basically, because you know, it's a numbers game. Here's what's going to happen. You're playing for the wild card. You're going to use your pitching staff. You're going to go in, and you're not going to be able to use your ace probably in that. You're going to probably use your second, third, or fourth starter in that game. Meanwhile,
you'd only be able to use your ace once in the first round.
Yeah.
The division series.
Oh, yeah, but I'm just talking about the wild card game. You're gonna save your ace for that wild card game or not use it. The pitching staffs are what suffer in the playoffs because of the format and because of the wild card. Because some pitching staffs have to let it all hang out just to make the playoffs when they're rested.
I don't think the play-in game should be 2 out of 3. I like the one-and-done format. But, you know, aren't the playoffs long enough? You got 2 best out of 7s, then you got a best out of 5.
Yeah.
You want 2 out of 3.
Well, I mean, that one-and-done seems to be a big, big problem with everybody. And I mean, I have no problem with one and done myself, but I mean, you know, back before, when they used to they had the one division, the National League two out of three, and the American League was a one game play it. So I mean, it's always, you know, they did find a way to back when, adding on to the season before the World Series. But then again, you didn't have playoffs to deal with. I don't know. Just my whole thing is I thought it was a good point to go. The kid brought up that they say there's no time to do it, but yet they can find a reason to fly teams around the world. You know, it's just.
Well, the Yankees and Red Sox, they didn't have 4 days off. They had 2 days off.
Okay, well, still.
Just basically one extra day off.
Okay, but I still.
I mean,
maybe I'm wrong.
It's
I
not
just,
like they weren't playing for.
I thought it was a good point. But it's okay,
oh, okay.
Maybe. You
okay.
Poo-pooed it. It's okay.
Okay. No, I understand why people would want a 2 out of 3.
Another thing they brought out on the and I never even realized this, and they brought up on the Richard Neer show. I'm going to give him a plug. The third worst fielding team in baseball.
I've watched them the last month. Not to hear that.
Me too. I mean, I was shocked. I mean,
they are, in my estimation, they're playing spectacular defense.
I don't know. I guess just by errors and stuff like that, they're the worst fielding percentage.
Wow.
And I'm like, I was stunned. I mean, I could not believe that. But I mean, they do have now. Does that say fielding is not as big a part of it? It is just a stat that you got to look at what the stat is. I mean, I was thinking about it when I was going, you know, how much does it really matter? I mean. Because I remember when one of the funniest awards I ever saw was Wade Boggs getting a Gold Glove. And the only reason he got it is because he never got to any balls. I mean, if the ball wasn't hit to him, Wade Boggs was not going to track it down. I mean, I think Derek Jeter, how his fielding improved when Scott Brosius got there compared to all the balls he had to track down with the ball. I mean, it's amazing. So there's some of these fielding statistics are skewed and ridiculous. I mean, they give Gold Gloves to guys that don't play positions. They give Gold Gloves to people, and they never look at how they play the position.
It's based on reputation. But I one defensive stat that I do like, I guess, is like defensive run save.
Yeah.
And that's a metric that I guess is somewhat objective that you can use as accurate measuring.
So I don't know what the Yankees do with that. So. But I mean, that was the old time stat of them being the third worst fielding team
So this is straight fielding.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's errors versus total.
I found it stunning, but it apparently it hasn't hurt them. So, you know, this Yankee team, when you look at this Yankee team, is it as good as any Yankee team in your lifetime? If you look at it just on paper, don't go in, you know, careers, whatever. On paper, when you look at it 1 through 9, that lineup.
It could be offensively. They need to do it all season.
Okay.
I think there were other Yankee teams that had better pitching.
Okay. Okay. Offensively, what team would match up with it? Yankee team.
Well, I mean, the obvious choice would be 98.
Yeah, but I see, 98 was a special team. That was a different – I mean, they couldn't bludgeon you the way this team can bludgeon you. I mean, I love that 98 team, too, and I hate the Yankees. I mean, as John Madden said it best on every – when he was talking about it in an interview. He goes, if you can't like this team, you can't like baseball. Because in 98, the Yankees played baseball about as well as you can play the game of baseball. When you talk about clutch hitting, doing everything right, working the counts, they were an anomaly in the world of baseball because there wasn't one thing they didn't do right, it seemed. So I take them out of it. But I mean, the great thing
about the 98 team is they were like piranhas. If you made a mistake, if you made an error, they pounced.
Yeah.
They were like piranhas smelling blood in the water.
And they never beat themselves.
The team didn't hit as many home runs as this team.
Right.
Of course, everybody hits more home runs now.
But I mean, when you look at this team, I mean,
difficult to navigate the lineup as an opposing pitcher 1 through 9.
I mean, I never got to see him. My father was alive, but I probably never saw him with the 27 Yankees. When you think about the power of this lineup, I mean, I think you have to go to that. You have to go to the 1960 Yankees, maybe.
Maybe the 39 team.
It's like, you know, those
teams had 3 or 4 Hall of Famers.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of power on this team. It's just, it's enormous. And, you know, that's why when you look at it now, you harken back to last year and you go, man, if Judge had been healthy in August, would the Red Sox have run away with it?
Yeah, that's a good point in retrospect. But another thing about this team, you can shut it down for 5-6 innings. And then it just explodes.
And
you look up and they got 6, 7, 8 runs. And that's the last 2 nights in Tampa Bay.
They seem to have that thing that you can never tell. It's the thing that takes the team off paper and makes them successful and feel that clutch gene. You know, there's certain teams that have the clutch gene.
In my opinion, that has been the Yankees' #1 Achilles heel for years and why they haven't won in the postseason. And yes, it's gratifying. Especially from LeMahieu.
And the other thing is, like, it's not just one person. That's the whole thing. You know, that's great teams don't wait around. I mean, even the Met team that I root for, I mean, when back in 86, everybody was Darryl Strawberry. But there was Ray Knight. There was, you know, there was Carter some nights. There was Hernandez some nights. There was Backman and Dykstra some nights when Dykstra had real teeth and wasn't an idiot. You know, even a Howard Johnson playing for Knight. You know, they had a lot of interchangeable parts of people coming in and doing good things and making things happen. That it's the clutch gene, and certain teams get the clutch gene, certain teams don't get the clutch gene. The Red Sox last year had the clutch gene. Everything went right. This year, it seems like that gene's going into session.
The 86 Mets team also, perhaps like the Yankee teams in the 70s. They were tough. They were gritty.
Yeah. You're never going to get that again.
They party hard and they play just as hard, and they came to bury you.
Yeah. That's
how the '98 team was.
It was like, you know, it was like, you know.
I don't know if this is quite there yet.
It's kind of like the old the Oakland Raiders. You better lock up your women and children because we're going to take them with us when we go.
But I mean, they're on a pace to win, like what the Red Sox did last year.
Right now, and there's the way to, you know, like last night, every reason to not win, and they win. You know what I mean?
Well, Tanaka gave up the lead. You know, the night before, Chapman gave up the lead.
Right.
And he did get out of the ninth, and then they scored 5 runs in the tenth, and last night 4 runs in the 11th.
And it's like you sit there and you like why can't he just lose this one game? It's like you sit there and go, really? Why don't you just guys go, that's one game. Go, no, every game seems to count with them, which makes it amazing.
Well, you know, Billy Martin used to always say, you push harder when you're winning and you back off when you're losing. And, yeah, I have to stay focused. They just grind. And, you know, you're getting these runs you expect to win every day. And, you know, they've won 6 out of 18. They're not the first team in major league history to do that. And so it'll turn around. They'll have another slump at some point where they might lose 4 out of 6, 5 out of 7.
Yeah, but they're going to be so far ahead.
Well, they've built up a margin, yeah.
That's the whole thing. They got the margin fair.
Chris Moore on the fan was saying the other day that he believes the Yankees will win the World Series by just outslugging. And I don't know, can you win the World Series that way?
We're going to see it. We're going to see. You know, the whole thing is.
I don't know if I have trusted any one of those pitchers to step up and not dominate a game.
Well, I mean, if
they're winning game 7-6, it won't matter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of a team that did win it without an ace that I could maybe.
The Reds?
How about the 79 Pirates against Baltimore? I mean, they didn't really have a great.
Is
pitching
Steve Glass
staff.
On that team?
No, you're thinking about 71. 79.
Okay.
The We Are Family with Stargell and Parker.
Right.
And, yeah. I mean, they had Colby coming out of the bullpen, but I don't, and maybe Candelaria, But, I mean, I don't think they had a dominant ace that really did anything for them.
You know, you look at these teams. I mean, the Astros, Verlander and Cole. I mean, even the Rays, Snell and Morton.
Yeah, but
now, Snell doesn't have any playoff experience. And even the Red Sox with Sale and Price.
Well, but those teams are going to have to work to get there, whereas the Yankees seem like they're going to sprint.
Now, speaking of Sale, he's back to struggling again.
Well, I mean, maybe he's got something wrong with that wing. I mean, you know, the thing is, he was shut down twice last year. So he could be in the starts of some kind of a you know, a shoulder problem or something.
I think the Red Sox offense is almost as good as the Yankees.
Well, but the pitching was the thing that made it. The thing last year was every time the Red Sox needed to get that run, they got it.
They got it.
It's like it's a reversal role. When you're that close on paper, that's what you need. Is that you don't give a word unto it.
How do you quantify that? How do you define that?
No, you live and you admire it. That's why. That's as fans. That's what we're supposed to be doing.
And that's what baseball is.
Yeah.
I mean, do you believe hitting is contagious? I do.
No, I'm a Mets fan. I don't believe that.
Well, it's negative contagion.
Yeah, it is. I would like to say infectious, but that's would even be a good word for it.
What is the Mets batting average with runners in scoring position?
Oh, it's got to be very, very low. I don't know. I don't even look at that. I mean, the Mets are just.
Their offense is okay.
Their offense is okay, but it's another situation. Okay, the bullpen is terrible.
Historically,
the fielding is mediocre at best. You're wasting a great rookie camp, Alonso. It should be out there where everybody sees it. DeGrom, you're wasting another solid year, but from him. I mean, some things. This is my favorite quote of the week. It sums up Mickey Callaway's time here.
Let's hear this.
Here's the Mickey Callaway quote of the week, and this explains the Mets' problem around why it's happening.
We're disappointed where we're at because we're disappointed where we're at. You
know? That sums it all up, then. Don't you think? I'm going to keep that quote because that's going to be my quote from life. I'm disappointed where I'm at because I'm disappointed where I'm at.
Oh, boy.
You can't buy that quote.
No, you can't buy that quote.
Are you kidding me? This is the guy that's going to inspire this turnaround. This is the guy that's going to lead this team out of the dark ages back to relevancy. This is the guy. As I've said many times, I have nothing personally against Mickey Callaway, but I would have loved to have been in that interview. What could he have said? Anytime I listen to him,
Mickey Callaway is the guy that would, like, kill any party.
I mean, he reminds me, and is the only thing I have hope for me. This is the only hope I have. Is he reminds me of Stump Merrill. And Stump Merrill was the last bad Yankee manager. And then the Yankees figured it out. Well, like I said last week, where's Howie Spira? If Howie Spira can get in here, get the Wilpon system for 2 years, get some baseball people to take over, the way it happened for the Yankees when Steinbrenner got suspended, maybe, just maybe, you can save this franchise.
We're disappointed where we're at because we're disappointed where we're at.
Exactly. Thank you for clarifying that. Mm-hmm. You can't buy that. And that's right up there with, I hate to say it, but it's right up there with how the Minutemen saved the airports in our illustrious president's speech. Are you kidding me? Really? Anyways, you know, it's the Mets right now where they're sitting at. There was a unique take that one guy I heard came up with. I forget who brought it up, but it's been echoed by a few different people, so I'm not going to give just to one person. What if the Mets go to Zach Wheeler and his agent and say, look, here's the deal. We need to kind of pull a Chapman here. What we're going to do is we will make you a good offer as anybody in the offseason, but we can bring a lot back for you right now. We could go to Cleveland. We could go to Minnesota. We could go and offer you as a trade bait. But please, remember, listen to us in November because we really want you. See if you can build up some It's a chance.
It would be just a rental.
It would be just a rental for one of these teams.
Do you want to have a chance to win?
For what? Who are you targeting? Are you talking about me and Matt? Zach Wheeler?
Zach Wheeler.
Yeah.
I mean, do you want to go to a place where you have a chance to be in the playoffs?
Right. We want you back. We do want you back. But we also want to kind of maneuver the system. We want to sit there, bring back. Maybe we can get our Gleyber Torres by using you to go to Boston, to go to Tampa Bay.
Well, what's to say the other team won't end up outbidding?
That's your chance. That's the chance you take. But you can lose them anyway at the end of the year anyways.
Yeah.
Here, at least you're maybe building up some goodwill with him because he is your third best pitcher. So you're telling them, we want you, and we will make we'll match the offer of whoever you got. But we can utilize you right now to get us some extra players. So when you do come back to us, we'll have a team around you.
If you come back to us. Well, does he like New York? Does he like playing for the Mets?
I don't know, but I mean, I think it's a good chance. I think I would do it if I was the Mets. If I was Van Wagenen, he was an agent. He speaks agent talk. So that should be his strong point.
But, Wheeler can't prevent this, can he?
I mean, he's gonna be gone anyway. So either way, he's to be traded, whatever. But you also want to keep, you know, the best thing. And I don't know if with Chapman, but it was known Chapman probably was going to come back to the Yankees anyways when they sent him to Chicago.
Yeah.
So I mean, it served both teams well, and probably the Yankees in the long run more. But then the Cubs needed to win a championship. They need championship worse than anything.
Yes.
So, I mean, you go to like a team like Cleveland, who, you know, maybe Wheeler becomes the pitcher that helps them get past the Twins. Also, that's the pitcher that helps them get past the Yankees. And maybe what the Twins have in their minor league. Or hell, the Astros. Give the Astros a big three. They seem to have a good farm system.
They wouldn't trade him in the division of the Phillies.
No.
Because they need pitching help.
No. That would be a bad visual.
Where else? Definitely Cleveland. Minnesota. What about Oakland?
The thing about Oakland is that Oakland, they seem to be happy doing what they said. They're sellers. They're never usually buyers.
No.
The one thing you will say, if you go to Oakland, they're not going to outbid you for them,
because
they never do. So that would maybe be the safe bet to go with.
But do you look at the Rangers as sort of an intriguing story? I mean, I think they've overachieved. They're like 6, 7, 8 games over 500, certainly in the wild card mix. And do you see the Indians, who have been pretty hot, getting closer to the Twins? So is there something to look forward to in the second half of the season that can create some excitement in baseball? The NL West is done.
Well, the only problem is if you live around here, it's hard to pay attention to anything more than yet.
If you're a baseball fan.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, the only thing is, it's like, I don't know if I really believe in the Indians. I don't know if I really believe in the Twins. I really don't. I actually, you know, I think the only team stop the Yankees or Red Sox in the AL.
Astros.
I'm sorry, I missed the Astros there. God bless. Yeah, sorry. The Astros, Red Sox, and Tampa Bay are the only three teams that stand in the way of the Yankees. And no other team can really bludgeon them. You know what I mean? There's nobody else there that's really, you can sit there and go, oh, this team has a chance. No, it's
On paper, certainly the Rays. I still have the best ERA in baseball. Maybe after giving up 8 runs the last 2 nights, they don't. But in terms of offense, they cannot match the Yankees.
No,
I think the Astros and Red Sox can.
Yeah. Well, it depends. The Astros have been beaten up a little bit. The Astros have to get healthy. I still think the Astros depend too much on Verlander being as great as he is. I mean, that's what they're built for, is Verlander being 2.
Yeah, they got a pretty good number 2 as well.
No, I know. I agree. Coles, I love Coles. Believe me, I do. I respect him like crazy. And I think that their 1-2 matches up with anybody in baseball. But still, every time the discussions, it starts and ends with Verlander winning 2 in the playoffs because he's established, he's their ace, he's their guy. And, you know.
Now, how the Yankees beat Pedro before the Red Sox finally won the World Series is they would drive up the pitch count, get him out in the 6th or 7th inning.
This team ain't going to do that.
And then you know, beat up the bullpen.
Team is not going to do that. Just forget about that. This team is not built to do that. The team does not do that.
What team?
The Yankees. They strike out.
They do also run up pitch counts, though.
Yeah.
They do strike out a lot, and they perhaps not as much as last year. Not Johnson Stanton having been in the lineup.
Yeah, exactly. You took 400 strikeouts out of your lineup.
There are still games, even this year, where they strike out 9-10 times a game.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Let's put it this way. When you go to the playoffs, you go back to what you're built to do, and they'll strike out. So they will strike out. But they can bludgeon teams. Still, I mean, they can get 5 runs, you know, in 5 minutes.
We've seen that last 2 nights.
Yeah, so I mean, I just...
But again, can you win in the postseason that way?
Well, we're going to have to find out. I mean, everybody's talking about the Yankees getting Baumgartner, getting this, you know. This is what drives me crazy about baseball fans and everybody, and some of the trades that people come up with. I mean, like, it's actually, it was great. I forget who I was listening to, and somebody wanted Scherzer. And whoever the host was talking to me goes, okay, I want Gleyber Torres. No, you can't have him. Okay, so what are you going to give me?
Then you're not making it.
Right. Okay, what are you going to give me? I mean, what do you want to give me, your crap? Anybody would want to give me their crap and take my best. I mean, it's just what people don't understand. And this is what the best trades help both teams. One team now, one team down the line. The thing about fans is they try and make it where the team gives up nothing and gets everything.
Well,
and it's just,
they're delusional.
I know.
But you know what? The Nationals are not trading shirts.
No.
They're the Rays.
Right. And he's
certainly the wild card race.
And he is their number one ace, and he is their everything. You know, he's the one thing they can count on every 5th day. He's going to come out and give them a superior effort.
And don't give that away.
As
far as Gleyber Torres, there's only one player I would trade him for.
Trout.
That's the only player in baseball.
And he's not,
and even that, I might think twice.
You don't need him.
Because Gleyber is younger.
You don't need him. I mean, Gleyber Torres is your second baseman for the next 20 years.
Possibly.
Like I said, we talked before, and people didn't listen, so I'm going to go back to what we were talking about. We're going to start, we wanted to get to this. The spirit of 1969, as we were calling it. If you were alive back then, there was a few things that happened in 69 outside of the riots and Vietnam War and everything that was going on. We had the landing on the moon. We had the World Series. And in an 18-month period in New York, might have been the best period to be a New York fan.
Ever.
You had the New York Jets winning the Super Bowl. You had the Knicks taking the NBA title. You had the Mets winning the World Series.
Three titles.
And all three teams since then have gone historically, well, I don't want to say bad totally, but they've had periods, they've had many periods of being bad compared to one or two, three periods of being good.
We've had 150 combined seasons, right?
Yep.
And 2 championships.
Right. Exactly.
73 Knicks and 86 Mets.
Right.
That's it.
And at the time, you had Joe Namath was 24 years old, the youngest quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl. And you were looking at that Jet team. If you haven't, don't know about it, historically, you should look it up. Because they had everything on that team. They had, you know, you had Matt Snell, who was kind of young. Emerson Boozer, who was young. Maynard was kind of the old guy on the team. The rest of that team was relatively young on both sides of the ball. Never came close to winning again. Never. And a lot of it had to do with Namath getting injured. And they had to depend on guys like Al Woodall, the quarterback, and stuff like that. Then you had the Knicks, who won 2 championships. And then and Clyde Frazier was young, and they brought on Earl Monroe, and you thought, okay, but they just drafted badly and eventually traded Clyde to Cleveland and for some that went into the great years of Hawthorne Wingo and John Gianelli and all those other classic basketball.
Hawthorne Wingo.
Yeah. So, you know, and then you have the Jets who consist of we talked about Jets. Then you had the Mets who 72 made the run, lost to a great Oakland team. One of the great baseball teams that never gets talked about, the early 70s Oakland A's. And then they go to 86 and they have that nice 84 to 91 run.
And then the late 90s under Valentine.
Late in the 90s. Valentine did one of the great managing jobs in the world to get that team to the World Series.
Yeah.
That team had no business getting to the World Series. And then you thought in the mid, 2005, that era when you got David Wright, you got a young Jose Reyes, you got Beltran, who's still relatively young, and you're looking at a young nucleus that should dominate the NL East for the next 10 years. Finally got guys who came from the farm system, Reyes and Wright, that were going to be maybe borderline, if not Hall of Famers for the first time for the Mets, and doesn't work out.
Right.
Doesn't work out. And then you got the Dark Knight comes around. He was all flash, no substance. And now you're where you are with the Mets, trying to start all over again with a pitching staff which is good right now. Syndergaard, a little worried about Syndergaard that he's ever going to really be the consistent player you want. You're wasting DeGrom's best years. And let's face facts, DeGrom is 30 years old. Syndergaard's right behind him.
They've been around for a while.
You know, it's now is are you what can you do, like I said, the Wheeler move or whatever, to make that turnaround? I mean, we talked about it. These three teams,
I think they're cursed.
They're cursed or whatever. But they've been.
Who cursed them?
They're the eternal hope of. I don't know. Maybe Sonny Werblin made a freaking deal with the devil. But it's just in Miss Payson and stuff. It's just funny that these three teams mirror each other.
They do mirror each other.
Eternally giving their fan base false hopes, and never carrying through on it. And then they sit there and this time, what we're doing, we're bringing in this GM.
The common denominator is poor ownership.
Could be.
And it starts from the top.
It could be. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, you got Woody Johnson, his son or Chris Johnson is running it now. And right now he's turned off, let's put it this way, he's going all in with Adam Gase. He better hope Adam Gase is what he's claiming to be, because you got Sam Darnold already on his second coach in 2 years. Mm-hmm. Is this going to give him a pattern where he's going to become, you know, the thing about great quarterbacks is they get consistency. They tend to be with the same coach for 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years.
Sure.
So they're in a system. They get to know the system better than the coach is calling the system. If you see the coach, the guys who struggle, I mean, very easy. Example, Eli Manning, 2 Super Bowls, was with Coughlin for most of his career until the last 3 or 4 years when screwing up. Ben Roethlisberger, 2 coaches. He had a Hall of Fame coach to begin with. Now you got Tomlin who's taking over. Consistency. Phillip Rivers, same time. Now it doesn't get him close. How many different coaches has San Diego had? You know, it's as good as he's been, he could have been better. Maybe if they kept Marty Schottenheimer from the beginning.
He's been with Sean Payton for a long time.
Yeah.
He won a Super Bowl.
Right.
And of course, you know, Belichick and Brady.
Exactly.
Plain.
Exactly. So that's the key to consistency with the quarterback, is keeping the quarterback and coach together.
Do you think the Knicks are trending toward competency?
No. Because the first thing I heard out of their mouths after they – failed to get Durant is, you know, Giannis is going to be a free agent in 2021. So
they're playing that same game.
Yeah, you're going to sit there instead of sitting there and writing down and we got a building block now. We were bringing in competent pros around
Barrett, you mean?
Barrett. We've got a competent. We got a number. We got the third. Okay, We are going to bring in a bunch of competent pros around, and which they did. They got a lot of good guys. Nothing spectacular.
They got quantity.
They got quantity, and they got solid pros who aren't going to produce spectacular, points or rebounds or anything, but they're going to be able to eat minutes on the court with him and support him, and hopefully him and Knox grow together fast, and you have a two-man tandem there. Kind of the way the Warriors did it at first. I would sit there and I would be looking at the blueprint of the Warriors saying, hey, this is the way you want to do these kind of things. The way they did it, they're instead of, try and grab the free agent who comes in and makes a big splash, like Cleveland did when they bought LeBron back. Yeah, they got their championship, but where are they now? He left them high and dry to with no hope, nothing. They're saddled with Kevin Love's contract. He's not really tradable. I mean, maybe he'll end up with the Celtics. Maybe the Celtics will give him something for them. But really, they don't really have tradable commodities to jumpstart him fast. They have to take that one championship and go with it forever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why this Knicks team, I have no faith in it. I mean, they wasted year of their fans' lives waiting for Zion did not come.
They traded Porzingis for one reason.
To bring in.
They believed they were going to get two max, be able to sign two max contracts.
Right.
And didn't happen. And now they spin it. Well, we didn't really want Durant anyway.
Right.
Which is BS.
Right.
How embarrassing is it for the Knicks now that Durant and Irving go to the Nets?
It should be very embarrassing. But, I don't know if you can embarrass that team any more than it is already, because the fact of the matter, they have an owner who really showed this year the way he treated that fan who just said, sell the team and kicks him out of the garden, how much disdain he has for his fandom. I mean, he doesn't care about his fans. He should know it by the way he ran Cablevision and screwed everybody with Cablevision. Here's a guy who's out for his own money. He's a spoiled jackass who took over his first father. And I'm sorry, he's run that as a parasite. There's not one person who sits there and goes, man, Jim Dolan knows what he's doing. And, I mean, what is the only thing you can say about Jim Dolan supposedly is he stays out of the Rangers' way. So he lets the Rangers do their own thing.
But it's the same narrative. Free agents don't want to come to the Knicks because they don't want to play for James Dolan.
Right.
They can have all the cap space in the world.
Right.
But
they can talk about the myth of the Mech.
The same narrative. James Dolan is the emperor with no clothes.
Right. He can talk about the myth of playing in the Mecca. No one cares. And they don't care about it. They don't have to come to New York to get their big contracts.
Not anymore.
No, they can use, as LeBron showed, as Jordan showed before him. I mean, think about it. It's just the Knicks never make the right moves. They just never make the right moves. They don't. And this offseason, I think maybe somewhere Kyrie and Kevin are sharing a laugh going, yeah, we made him look like an asshole. I'm sorry. It's just, we made him look like an asshole.
What do you think about the idea that they did sign with the Nets?
Well,
that shocked a lot of people.
The only thing I think about it, it's a real risky proposition for the Mets. For the Nets. But the Nets, it's a very risky proposition, because I'll tell you one thing. I like D'Angelo Russell. I thought he was somebody. He was their all-star. He was beginning to become the face of that franchise. And it's a good young team with a good young chemistry last year. Yeah, they only won 42 games. Nothing spectacular. They got into the playoffs. They were run out of the playoffs, and rightly so by Philadelphia. But the thing about the team was they were young and building together. Now you're bringing these two guys in, and you got to wait 1 year for Durant.
Yeah.
Kyrie, as he showed in Boston, is not exactly the type of guy to mentor people.
It's a mystery how he'll fit in.
Right.
It could be good. It could be bad.
The other thing about him is next season on cruise control, thinking he's got it free because everybody's waiting for Durant to come the next year. You know what I mean? Everybody's sitting there going, already people are saying, 21 is the year that's going to count for the Nets. You don't need to get that whispered in Kyrie Irving because that's just giving him a free pass next year, to me. And
on the flip side, the fact that they have these two guys tells you though that they're willing to go for it. They're willing to.
Yeah.
Willing to be aggressive, you know, they want to be players.
Yeah, but the only thing is if you
but it does, it definitely changes that dynamic of the team. But I think these players look at the Nets, good coach, good GM, good infrastructure.
Yeah, well, they have a better they definitely are a better landing spot than across the river. There's no two ways about it. I'm just saying it's a risk for the Nets if this doesn't work out because. It's one of those things where you'll have two aging guys. You're going to have to get to peddle their contracts to somebody who's take them on. It could become a one of those deals. We're stuck with two guys that aren't what they used to be. God forbid Kevin Durant doesn't come back and be the player he used to be. And now you're stuck with a max contract. You got to get to somebody who wants a max contract to get an expiring contract. You know, you go through that whole scenario, hopefully for their sake. Mm-hmm. And I'm rooting for him. In a way, I'm rooting for him because I'd love to see him. I really like D'Angelo Russell. And I really, you know, I'm happy for him. He went to Golden State. I thought that was a good move for him. That was a real big under the radar signing when you figure that Clay's going to be working with the knee injury all year long. So now you got a second number, or a guy who can step into the Clay role with Stephen Curry, to be in his Clay, his number two Clay. And then when Clay comes back, you got a top three. You got Clay can switch him to the three spot, and you still got a great backcourt.
Yeah, I was reading someone predicted the Warriors were going to miss the playoffs next year. I'm not sure I'd go that far.
I don't think so. I'll tell you.
That could be brutal.
The guy I feel sorry for, if you want to talk about the NBA right now, is Billy Donovan. That poor bastard. I was a big Billy Donovan. I've been a Billy Donovan fan since he was Billy the Kid with Providence and taking that Providence team
to
the Final Four.
OKC.
Right. I mean, this poor guy was I mean, he already had two NCAA championships in the bank. You know, go down the list of coaches that have won multiple NCAA championships. There's very few that have won three. No, in the history of the sport, only a handful have won three.
Yeah.
He already had two in the bank.
No.
Three, he's a legend. Four, you're getting into Wooden, Krzyzewski's Calhoun territory. So, I mean, you know, he's young. I just will never understand the attraction when you are a successful college coach, why you go pros?
Because it's the final challenge.
Yeah, but you never have the control. You have you can pick the
exact. Why did Beilein leave Michigan?
We're gonna see, aren't we? Name me a coach that have left their college programs and been successful
in the NBA.
Yeah. Patino couldn't pull it off. And Patino started in the pros and he started Providence, went to the pros. He did well with the Knicks the first time around. Celtics, he was an abject failure.
Larry Brown?
Yeah, Larry Brown, he's a freak.
he
might be the best coach of all time, actually. Larry Brown might be the best X's and O's coach ever.
You look at his resume.
Yeah. Everywhere. He stopped everywhere. He's my God.
You know, Johnny Cash sings, "I've been everywhere."
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, I mean, he's just like
he probably coached like 20 teams,
and he can win anywhere he coaches. I mean, I don't understand, you know, what he does better than anybody else, but he does win.
But after 2 years, he's got to be moving on.
Yeah, I mean, he can't stay in one place.
It's amazing.
You know, he had a lot of Billy Martin in him. Not the drinking, not the fighting, but there seemed to be the two of them were like those type of people. They had that quick fix. Give me that, you know, wherever they go, that team they inherit, they're going to get them to be playoff.
And maybe some inner demons.
Yeah.
Like you always have to be trying to prove yourself.
Or, you know, the whole thing is at some point it's not enough to win. You have to control everything. thing. You know, I want to be.
He was a very controlling
guy. You know, another guy on that is Bill Parcells. Bill Parcells, even when
that's why I couldn't stay in Dallas.
Well, even his great time with the Giants, people forget when he was with the Giants, their Super Bowl year, he flirted with Tampa Bay. Their second Super Bowl year, he leaves. You know, he was always looking for the door. Him and George Young were not the best of friends.
No, they were not.
And you know, they made it work, but they weren't the best friends. As his famous quote about buying the groceries, I mean, he wanted control. It wasn't enough to be known as a great coach with him. I mean, he wanted control. He wanted to be able to be the be-all, end-all and get, you know, everything. So, I mean, maybe it is strange. But, I mean, like I said, going back to Billy Donovan, I'm like sitting there going, he must be sitting there going, you know,
why
I'd have a better
why
chance.
Why did I do this?
Why didn't I stay in Florida? He was a god in Florida.
Yeah.
And now he's in OKC. And people were already, the Knicks fans I heard this morning about getting wet. It's like, guys, you need to fail again. I mean, he might come here. Who knows? Westbrook might be just about done sitting there going, well, I can't get anybody to stay here with me. Maybe I should go somewhere else and give it a shot. But I don't know.
What do you think of all the NBA signings just in general? It was like a frenzy.
It
all happened quick, unlike MLB.
Yeah. And unlike any other sport, really, most take time to get everybody signed. Although NFL, I think a lot of it has to do with MLB is not – you got to remember one thing is – the NFL and NBA drafts are probably the biggest things in the spring and summer, and you know you can see how a team takes shape very fast. Nobody pays attention to MLB draft.
Well, 40 rounds.
Well, I mean, but it's just that those players you're not going to see for
right.
5, 6, 7, 10 years. Some never again. Never
not,
again.
Not 10 years.
Well, never again.
But the top players would be at least 3.
Right. So I mean. When you're a free agent, you're looking to go somewhere. You're not looking at the MLB draft. You're looking at the roster, and you're looking maybe at their AAA roster. You're not looking at the draft. Here, you know, the NFL draft just happened. Free agents know, okay, that quarterback's going there. I'm a wide receiver. I want to work with him. You know, that's where I want to go. They got the good young coach. They got the good young quarterback. I'm moving now before I and in the same in the NBA. I mean, you see who picked up a draft choice here and there. It's my pocket. I picked up a draft choice here and there, and that's where they go to. I mean, the hammer that dropped last night might have been the biggest hammer of the free agent season.
Yeah.
Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, along with a good core that's there already and a great coach, they just stepped up to the Lakers unfortunately lost a lot to get.
Isn't it funny how – you know, the teams who have always been regarded as like the little brothers in their cities, the Nets, kind of maybe upstage.
They did.
They're bigger brothers. Now, the Lakers made a pretty good signing. I think what you've seen in the NBA is almost like an upheaval where you have a chance now to have unprecedented power. In the league.
Yeah.
I don't know how anyone could say that's not a really good thing. You know, let's get away from this trend where there's only 2 or 3 teams that can win the championship. Now, I don't know if I'm going to become a big NBA fan, but
it'll make it interesting.
It'll make it more interesting.
I mean, maybe there's some good young teams out there. The Bucks, the Sixers, they're good young teams in the East to watch. The Pacers are maybe questionable now. They lost some guys like Collison and that, but I mean, they could be. If you look at the overall picture, a lot of people made some very significant, interesting pickup.
Yeah.
I mean, that could change the landscape a little bit as we go down the line. I mean, Chicago's got a good young backcourt. No one's talking about Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn. There's some definite talent around the league. And there's not as many have-nots, shall we say, as there used to
be.
So it could be an interesting NBA season next year. Hopefully they don't blow it by doing the usual things they do, by shoving the same story down our throat. And that's where I think that the NBA does a really bad job, is they only focus on LeBron. They focus on a few stories. They don't give you – there's a lot of guys that fly under the radar. Maybe they like flying under the radar. But, I mean, the Greek Freak would be – it is somebody who people should be focusing on. Embiid, people should be focusing on. There's a bunch of young players out there that are getting no play because the big sports outlets only want to talk about LeBron
and Durant and Curry.
And Curry gets kind of shoved in the backlight right now, which he likes a little bit. Unfortunately, now his cover's gone, so he's going to have to be the face of the franchise again. It's funny how Durant took over as the face of that franchise when he went there after Curry had been there for had really established it as a winning franchise. So it's going to be interesting. I think the NBA can be interesting again. I just get discouraged by their coverage, and I get discouraged by the people who are there leading their coverage, and I don't want to use their names here because it wouldn't be fair. They don't know me, and they're not going to use my name, so it wouldn't be fair. But I think everybody who is out there listening knows who I'm talking about. The major networks do a disservice by bringing terrible coverage of their sport.
Well, I'd also like to see more of an emphasis on defense. Just, you know, a general comment.
Yeah, it's just the only thing is that the it's like anything. I mean,
and less 3-point shots.
You and I argued about this for years. You wanted more hockey action. I was like, I like hockey defense. I like more. I like the 2-1 game, the 3-1 game.
So it's funny. I should be pining for defense.
Exactly.
Or I want more offense in hockey.
Yeah, exactly. It's like
apples and oranges.
It is. I know it is. But I'm just saying, it's just, you know, everybody. No, but overall in every sport, everybody wants, you know, chicks dig the home run. You know, in football, they put handcuffs on the cornerbacks where they can't touch a wide receiver. So the wide receiver always has the benefit. Why do you think these guys are throwing 50 touchdown passes on the flick of a wrist? I mean, defense in every sport, defense has become I don't know, a necessary evil. The way they look at it, the people who run the sport, they think scoring is the only way to get people to attract people to a game. You know, they want to see, the NFL wants to see every game 35-31. You know, and
well, you can't say that Pat Riley was coaching the Knicks that those 88-73 games was good for the league.
You know, there was a certain joy to it because it was like, you know,
like mud wrestling. It's like
look, I don't want to see a bunch of Bill Laimbeers. You know, I don't want to see go to that length where, you know, there guy comes down the lane and he's checking to make sure. Well, yeah, he wants to make sure that his major medical covers the injury he's going to have. It's ridiculous when some of the stuff that went on. Yeah, but also a good, you know, Michael Jordan played good, tough hand check defense. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with a guy putting his hand on the guy's hip and pushing him and he wants him to go.
That's been outlawed.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was nothing wrong with that. That was the way we were brought. That was street yard. That was the way you were brought up in the street yard. When you played with your brother outside, if you were playing against your big brother, what's the first thing he did to you? He bodied you.
Yeah.
Made sure you couldn't get off a shot.
Right.
And then once you got to be bigger, you learned how to throw the elbow.
Yeah.
You know, that's how we learned it. That's what people can't understand is like when you sit there and you go, yeah, but when you're playing outside, man, and there's no referees and it was good, competition, you're playing with your buddies out there, you know, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, whatever you could get there. And it was some good, you heard that a lot. And if you call the foul because your ball didn't go in, you'd get shut up, you know, you'd get a lot of those the descriptive adjective you don't want to attach to your name, one beginning with P and ending with Y, that we know very well. Get up. Again.
Get up.
We want to touch a little bit the NHL free agency, which, of course, we don't have a lot to talk about, but we do want to talk about at least. And we got to pull this up. Down to our Rangers, Islanders, New Jersey Devils section of the ledger. Let's see. Forgive me, there it is. Islanders, they kept Lee.
Yeah, When is the great Lou Lamoriello going to make a big free splash in free agency?
Well, we'll see what your splash is like.
Might be
a belly flop. Okay, you got Panarin.
Yep.
Okay, let's see. O'Regan and McKeag, what are they bring? What's they maintain that? Okay.
They got Trouba.
Yeah.
From Winnipeg, I thought that's a good pick, and then of course Kuko with the number two draft pick. So I think those are three key
issues. I still, you and I were talking on the phone last night.
You're not high on the Panarin signing.
No, not. I think the Rangers don't have the people around him for him to be successful. I think he needs some tops around him. I think also needs some guys that can bury the puck. They don't have guys that can bury the puck. Who's he going to pass to outside of? I can never say his name right. Who's he going to? No, Zibanejad. Who's he going to pass to?
Pass to himself.
So, like I said to you last night, he's going to be a 50-goal scorer. We say this on the air. He's not going to have. I said he's going to be a 62-point guy.
I think he's going to get 80 points.
62. I think he's going to lose about 20 assists. I just don't see as being that.
Don't know who it might be, but they'll figure it out.
Because they've done such a great job in the past.
They got a new coach.
Yeah, I like the new coach. I like the new approach. I think they should keep going that way. I just thought, like, the thing for me, hard to really trust. The Rangers seem to never let players develop, or never develop players. Jimmy Vesey's another one. They just got rid of him. And not that there was no reason to keep him. I understand that. But I remember my friend, I don't think he's listening. If he is, it'd be great. Broadway Tim, bartender in Newark, Jets, Yankees, Knicks, Rangers fan. So I don't know where the Jets come from. But anyways, it was like when he got Jimmy Vesey, we had an argument. I said, he's not going to be anything. He'll be gone.
Did this guy think he was going to? Like
he was just like
our trophy winner.
Well, nobody did.
The league in scoring. But the
Rangers came out and started saying about him. You know, he's going to be this. He's going to be that. And I'm sorry, he's not. I said at that point, look at how they kill these guys off before they develop. And it's true.
Well, here's the question: why don't these highly touted players out of college develop with the Rangers?
I don't know why. They don't work with him.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kreider has had a generally underwhelming career.
I mean, he's
been okay.
Was he overhyped when he first got here? I mean, first of all, the first thing that hurt him was that great playoffs when he first came up. He had a real solid playoffs.
Yes.
It's the same thing that's kind of going on with Brady Shea. Is that the Brady?
Another guy that hasn't really.
Well, that's the whole thing. Is Brady Shea came up, what, half a year? He came up mid-season 2-3 years ago?
Yeah.
And then he had a nice playoff. He had a real nice play, 2 or 3 goals.
Yep.
And then everybody's sitting there going, okay, here we go. We got our next Ryan Leach. And it's like, you don't even see what he's been yet. He's not a full year. I think Brady Shea is going to be a nice, solid defenseman. I think I like him a lot. I think they can develop. He's not like the human Zamboni that I'm always talking about, Mark Stahl. I think he actually hits people and actually cares out there. He's not for a good skate to get his muscles going or whatever. But anyways, I think, you know, they do have, but they just don't have the patience with any of these kids. And I don't know, they just, I know when they had Vigneault was like the George Allen of hockey. Give me a veteran over a rookie or a young any day in a week.
Have to think that having been a college coach, Quinn will work better with younger players.
You would hope so, yeah. And you would hope you would have a handle of where they're at right now and what they need to, but maybe it's down for they're not doing the right stuff. Maybe they're not developing the right people. I mean, I don't know. I thought Schoenfeld was running that.
I think ZZ leaves the Rangers. A huge disappointment.
Yeah, there's no two ways about it.
Three years.
He scored like 33 points last year?
Just not much. Not much.
No, you didn't show anything. No, it was like, is it? We're going to see what happens You know, I know you don't like the great Lou Lamoriello, but let's see. If the Islanders, if the things he does with this team, if their farm system, I don't know, Los Angeles Tigers games, maybe he has belief. There's a lot of kids down there that we'd be better than spending money unwisely for people that don't fit in.
Well, the roster last year was comprised almost entirely of Sound Tiger players.
So he likes the people down there.
And re-signing Anders Lee was key.
Yeah. That was a good. That was a definite move right there. That was something they had to do. So I
think everybody knew that would happen.
I mean, yeah. Oh, I didn't think they were going to let him get away.
But are there any earth-shattering signings here? I don't think so.
No, it's not like nothing big out of the market. Actually, the Rangers got probably the biggest name.
I don't think the landscape has really changed.
No. And hockey's not built around free agent signings anyway.
No.
It's just it's not the way it's gone. It's time to bring a big name to a bad team. He's only going to be able to affect 20 minutes a night. You know what I mean? The most a guy's on the ice 20 minutes. So. You need to build a team. You can't build one player.
Yeah.
That's why it's so hard to sell hockey in America, because you got to love the team concept. It's why soccer never goes over here, because you need a lot of players to win a game. You don't need one player.
I think hockey fans are the most passionate fans.
They are. If you understand the sport, you definitely love the sport. Yeah.
All you have to do is to point to St. Louis, how that team became embraced.
There's no better sport
And this is the city that has seen the Cardinals win 11 championships.
Yeah.
And this team may go down as the most beloved team.
Although they were on Gloria as their theme song, the disco version.
They brought the Stanley Cup to Busch Stadium last week.
Every team does that.
They play Gloria. But now you think the song needs to be retired?
I think I've never thought it should have been brought back. The only thing that song was ever good for was in the movie Flashdance. I mean, come on. It's just that song was stupid. I mean, who came up with that song? I played you the version. You could have done the Animals' Gloria. You could have done the Doors doing the Animals' Gloria. You could have done U2's Gloria. You didn't have to pick her Gloria. Jesus, that was the worst song.
That's the choice this player made in the bar in Philadelphia.
They must have been drunk that night.
Oh, hockey players drunk?
Oh, man, yeah, never hear about that. It is, like I said, hockey, there's not too much wait, see what the build for these guys. I do think that Lamoriello will have the Islanders on the right page. I don't want to be so negative about Panarin, but I just don't. I just think it's the wrong time. If you wait a year, if he was a year later and maybe they had developed something that I could see tangible around him, I just think even when they put in a pay, I look at the left chart. At him is a big jab. No left wing. So I guess they're going to skate one wing down. They're going to play three defensemen with two wings on that. I guess that's how they go.
They have no left wings on the roster?
No left wing on his line. You figure, at this stage, they would take whatever top left wing was there and just put them. No, they just left it blank. So it's like, okay, that says enough. That's enough of a commentary.
Well, I guess this will have to be figured out in training camp.
Well, I would hope so, unless it's like, they're doing some kind of
a missing, novel approach. We're going to play three defensemen.
We'll call it the missing man formation.
It's like the opener trend in baseball.
Well, yeah. It's like, you think about it. The French gag line, and we'll call it the ghost line.
The ghost line.
We have no left wing. Our left wing is a ghost. Like, come on. We'll see. They're going to solve it over summer. And hopefully they do well. I mean, I'm not an anti-Ranger the way I am anti-Mets. No, well, The Mets, I'm a Met fan. I mean, I'm a realistic Met fan. Anybody, when they were jumping, everybody, you know, I was jumping up and down. When everybody was jumping up and down, I was like, oh, let's see. I don't see it.
So they got to blow up the bullpen, right?
Well, yeah. Now, here's what you're stuck with. You're stuck with this kid, Diaz, who everybody was high on, who had 7 saves last year. And you got to figure him out. You know, here's the deal with Callaway. This is what I want to say to Callaway. I want to say to the Mets. Figure it out. Okay? You're dead in the water right now. Could you come back and make the end of the season exciting? I don't think you could get all the way back in, but you could become a spoiler. You could become the team nobody wants to face. You could become that.
You could.
But there's the whole thing. Like I said, make the remove. We try and bring him back. Make a right move. Get some. Go to a Cleveland. Go to the Twins. See what you can get for him to make the move to get something back.
Now, I'll confess that I don't watch Mets games. I don't see the body language. I don't see the results. But based on what I read and the game results and the continued struggle of the bullpen, this team could now adopt a give-up mode.
We're disappointed where we're at because we're disappointed where we're at.
I mean, that sums it up.
We're keeping that cut.
There are 60 minutes in an hour because there are 60 minutes in an hour.
There you go. It explains everything. I drive a Ford
because
I drive a Ford. It's just, we are what we are.
Do you think the wheels could come off on this team and they could lose 95 games?
Yeah. Easily.
Just give up.
Yeah. Why wouldn't it? Why couldn't it?
Well, I mean, if you have any professional pride, you try to prevent that.
You got to know how to do it. They don't have, you know, I think Todd Frazier has a personality you're looking for. You need those competent pros, those guys, those Paul O'Neills I'm always talking about, those guys, Gary Carter and Keith. Well, Keith, you saw it done with Keith Hernandez in '84 when he came, and whether guys that know how to be professional and win. Messier when he came to the Rangers. The Rangers had Brian Leetch there. You had Graves. You had these guys, but you didn't have anybody to sit there to tell them how to win, and that's what these guys don't have. I mean.
No one on that team who can fill
is there. And there is no tradition of winning. There's no, like, you know, the Yankee guys that are playing now watch that Yankee team and they're still those guys hanging around to tell them what it was and what it meant to be a Yankee for
they
them.
They also have good players.
They're good players, yes, but you know, I don't see talent in Major League. I mean, yeah, that Yankee team is freaking awesome. I agree with you. But the difference between them and, say, Philadelphia isn't as big as you make it out to be. It's just that Philadelphia is underachieving. You know what I mean? And that comes from the profession. You have the
it have a better players. Just their talent.
Yeah, but you can sit there and while away in a city winning nothing, still being a great hitter. Remember one thing about baseball. Baseball is an individual sport played in a team concept.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the difference between winning and losing is making that team concept bigger than the individual.
Yeah.
And that's what the Yankee team is doing right now, is they're achieving both things. The biggest thing is the team. You know, I don't know how to explain it. It's like we talked about, that clutch gene. It's the thing that takes the stats off of paper and puts it in front of you so your eye catches it and says, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. And that's what the Yankee team can do.
But the other night, just an example, they give up the 3-1 lead in the ninth. You know, Chapman throws a couple of wild pitches and Sanchez lets a ball get past him. They low bases. He gets the strikeout to get out of it. Okay. I mean, you get a second life. Gardner gets leadoff walk. Judge comes up. He's behind 1-2. He fouls off like three or four pitches. He grinds out a walk.
Yeah.
And that's set up.
I know.
But that's just having a positive approach at the plate.
Well, that's
a
like,
professional approach
yeah,
at
but,
the
yeah,
plate.
But,
is there anybody in the Mets who can do that?
No. And the worst thing is, no, there isn't. And the worst thing is, our best player is a rookie. And our best player, the rookie can't put the team on the back. And the rookie's not going to be able to walk in there and slap people around and say to them, this is how we do things. You know, he's not going to be able to tell Cano, who, when he doesn't hustle out, that's not legit. You're supposed to be setting an example for me. He's not going to be able to do that. He's not going to be able to talk to the different players about throwing to the wrong base or getting caught off second base in the middle of a rally. He's not going to be able to sit there and tell these people those kind of things. You know, I remember he was there in the 80s, and you would see him on the bench signaling to base runners things he was seeing. He would be telling them what to do. He'd be over on first base telling the pitcher what to do. You know, that's a leadership that either you have it or you don't have it, and they don't have it. They have not identified it. They can't get it. You got to find a player that can come in here and turn professional. Because, you know, it's obvious the manager can't do it.
You still need good players.
Yeah.
I keep going back to that.
Yeah, but here's the deal. The difference between championship is the professionalism brought to the team. Look at the California Angels with Trout. Why is Trout not winning? You have the best player in baseball.
One guy.
Well, you have Albert Pujols, who definitely is now Pujols, but he still is somebody who can, by today's stats, put up some stats. You had who else? Yeah, their team. If you look around, their team is not that bad.
The Angels?
Yeah.
They're better. They're 500, right?
Right, but I mean, you have the best player in baseball. Why? Why aren't they winning every game?
Because there's not enough around him.
No, it's not because there's not enough around him. It's because they're not the right players around him. You don't have to have an all-star at every position, but you do have to have competent players at every position who know how to play the game and do it the right way. Right now, the Yankees are lucky. They got a bunch of them. But they don't always have. They didn't have them last year all the time. They didn't have LeMahieu. He's made a difference since he got here.
Difference.
Yeah. So I mean, that's the thing. But LeMahieu is not a great player. He's never going to the Hall of Fame. He'll play in the All Star game in the year. Maybe in the MVP voting, but it's a blip on his radar. This DJ LeMahieu is not a.
He's a career 300 hitter, right?
He's a generational player.
I didn't say he was a generational player.
He's a good player. Who's been brought into a good situation on a potentially great team, and he's taking advantage of it. That's what I mean. You don't have to have great players around you, but you do have to have competent and good professionals.
Yes. Now, do you think the Baltimore Orioles could have a professional approach in the way they play the game?
Right now, what they got?
Yeah.
They could be better than they are, but they're not going to improve because they just don't have enough talent.
Well, that's my point.
Well, yeah, but the only thing is But the whole thing is also, do you think that the Yankees, if winning all injuries, if you didn't have LeMahieu and all those guys, what would they have been playing like?
They would have probably been 500.
Okay.
But they had fill-ins who could hold the.
So there you go. I mean, right now, the difference between the Mets and the Yankees situation, okay, the difference between Gleyber Torres and Pete Alonso is – Gleyber Torres has a team around him, and Pete Alonso has nothing around him.
What's Alonso's batting average?
I don't know. I have to look it up. Right? I think it's pretty good. I mean, 270, 280. I don't know. I have to look.
Torres.
Yeah. He's still in the middle of a freaking lineup where he doesn't have to do much. He can wait for things to happen.
That's right. Now, how do you define playing the game right?
Playing the game right, okay, you're having good at-bats. Don't make the mental error. You can make the physical error, which every coach has told me since the Little League time. Throw the right base. You know, get solid pitching. You know, just always be in the game working. There's a certain
– How about running out ground balls?
Running out ground balls is key. That's one thing I always loved about it as much as Mike Piazza. Mike Piazza had no speed at all, and he busted his ass down the first baseline every time.
Derek Jeter.
Yeah, well, Derek's famous for it. I'm talking about a catcher who had every reason to sit there and go, man, my knees are aching. I mean, Derek Jeter played, was a guy who was in good shape throughout his career, young guy playing shortstop. I mean, when you talk about the wear and tear leg.
Oh, okay.
That's a supreme effort to sit there and go, it's a ground ball in the eighth inning of a game. And even if we're ahead by 5 runs, and it's a ground ball he hit, and he busts down the line.
Now let's play the what-if game. 1986, game 6, bottom of the 10th. Instead of Mookie Wilson at the plate, Robinson Cano is at the plate. And he hit a ground ball to first base.
You're dead in the water.
And it goes through Buckner's legs.
He would have been out.
Is Cano even running to first base?
Well, first of all, if it goes through his legs, he's safe. It's all right because the ball went down the right field line. He would then woke up and said, oh, I got to get there. No one was covering and stuff. The thing was that Mookie forced Buckner to look up. Everybody will tell, anybody who's analyzed that play, they say, and even Buckner admitted it, supposedly, he peaked. And when he peaked, he lost the ball.
Because Mookie was running as hard as he could.
Right, and Mookie could run. And unearthing with Buckner couldn't. But the fact of the matter is, like, that's kind of a hard thing to compare. It probably would have worked out for the. It wasn't like the ball went a foot away from him. The ball went 10 yards down away from him. So he would have been unless he took a right turn into the dugout, and if he did it on that team, he would have been gotten his ass kicked.
They would have beat the crap out of him.
Yeah, that right here in the middle of the field.
Right.
So and then
can you imagine Cano when that on a Billy Martin managed team? I mean,
Billy would have been the first man out there beat.
Billy was ready to challenge Reggie Jackson in the dugout.
Yeah, exactly.
No, so I understand what you're saying. Maybe you need both.
You do need both, but I mean the fact
maybe, that maybe the Mets have neither.
The Mets do have neither right now. But the worst thing is. My fear is
Frazier's a good guy, though. Of course, he passed 220.
My fear is they're going to do the same thing with McNeil and Alonso.
They're going to drive him out
with Reyes and Wright. I mean, they're going
to drive him out.
It's either that or they're going to waste these production, and then the injury bug will happen or something. Something will happen that where they won't achieve. It's like Riley said, and rightfully so, and this is where. You know, what they talk about with championship teams is it's so hard to lose even when you get deep into the playoffs because you realize how much work it took just to get there. And another effort like that, if not more. So right now where the Mets are sitting at is you're wasting time. You're wasting another year of DeGrom. Syndergaard is not having a great year, but you waste another year of his career. Matt is still not developing it too. I think Matt would be somebody right now. I'd look at him. I'd like to see Matt be developed into an Andrew Miller type player.
Okay.
Big lefty out of the bullpen. Bring him in different situation. He obviously can't be counted on to go out there and give you 5 good innings every outing. But what about 3?
How about putting Wheeler in the pen?
But Wheeler's not the problem. The problem because he's not developing.
Well, they did put him in the bullpen.
Who, Matt?
Yeah.
But, I mean, does he have a real role yet? No. Why would you use him in the Andrew Miller role?
Did he pitch one of the Yankee games?
I didn't see him in there. I didn't watch the Yankee game, to tell you the truth.
Cody did.
If they did put him in the bullpen, then I'm
like. You're gearing up for NFL training camps. That's what you're looking forward to.
Yeah, pretty much.
Only a few weeks away.
I know. Here we go. The Eli speculation. Yeah, we'll see the classy sports writers of New York coming out trying to put Barry Eli.
I'm the typical Yankees fan. They've won 16 out of 18. I want it to be 17 out of 19, 18 out of 20. You know,
you're greedy.
Totally greedy. Totally greedy. I want them to win every single freaking day. Is there anything wrong with that?
No, but it is that the thing about the Yankees.
It's not gonna happen.
No. Well, it should be. Yeah, that's how life should be. But, I mean, unfortunately, I root for the wrong team. So, that's it for today. We are going to hit the road. We thank you for tuning in.
Roof,
I hope
Jack.
You enjoyed today as we got into the spirit of 69 and what happened to those three teams, plus much more.
We were going to play a cut from Hotel California, but I guess technical difficulties have prevented that.
Unfortunately, but you know the song. And what was the other line you used?
You can check out, but you can never leave the Hotel California.
Now you know what it feels like to be a Met fan.
Yep.
Talk to you next week. This is Joe Ryan.
And Bob Birch.
Two grumpy little sports writers.